Blog Talk Radio.
Broadcasting to the world.
BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul. Talk radio at its best. You're listening.
Hi, this is Dr. Daniels, and you're listening to Healing with Dr. Daniels on the Rainbow Soul Network. I'd like to remind people that the call-in number is 914-338-0695, and we have a lively chat room going at healingwithdrdaniels.chatango.com. So you can log on and join the conversation in the chat room, and you can also call in 914-338-0695 as well. Okay, tonight's topic is, are your clothes making you sick? You know, this is a shocking thing, and it never occurred to me, because as a kid, I only got one set of new clothes a year. And so that one, actually it wasn't really a set, usually it was one new dress a year actually. And the rest of the clothes I sewed myself. I would go to the fabric store and I'd pick out some fabric. If you took a whiff, if it smelled, I didn't buy it. And then I would take it home and wash it anywhere from one to three times and then cut it out and sew something with it. So I really didn't have any impact of new clothes because I did not buy them that much. So I would buy, like I said, about one new item a year. Then, with my kids, many of you know I practice medicine as a doctor, and I had some patients who just bought awesome clothes for their kids, and they would give me the hand-me-down clothes for my kids, or if I couldn't get good hand-me-downs, then I would sew clothes for the kids. So I really wasn't exposed to the idea of new clothes. And even though I had a girl, a boy, and a girl, I handed down all the outerwear from the oldest. My poor son had to wear his sister's hand-me-down winter jackets, and we just handed them right on down to the third one. So I just didn't have any encounter with any of this. Of course, since I was a doctor, people didn't make fun of me and I guess talk about me maybe the way they would have talked about other mothers had they been this frugal. Or maybe they did talk about me, but I was too busy working to be aware of it. I think that was probably it. I'm sure that there is a fair amount of discussion about that eccentric doctor. But this is just to say that I really was not exposed to the concept of new clothes very much. And it wasn't until, I guess it was 8 months ago, I got the bright idea that I was going to sleep on the ultimate bed. And so I went online and I checked this and I checked that, and I found that the absolute ultimate bed had that memory foam mattress on the top, anywhere from 2 to 4 inches, and then on top of that, you put a mattress cover or something like that. So I said, okay, golly geez, I'm going to buy a 2 to 4 inch memory foam topping to put over my, I guess it was a 15-year-old mattress. That was my plan. So I ordered this memory foam. It finally got to me. here in Panama, these things take time. And I opened it up, and I just about passed out from not being able to breathe. I'm like, whoa, what are they putting on that stuff? And, of course, they gently suggested that we should, whoever buys this thing should air it out to dry. So not being familiar with this stuff, I took this memory foam thing and hung it over the clothesline, whereupon it promptly cut in half through the clothesline. But anyway, I left it outside for 24 hours, brought it back in. It still really wasn't, it was still had an odor to it. And I said, you know what? There's got to be a radio show in here. This just can't possibly be safe. So I decided to look into it. And that kind of gave birth to today's show. Are your clothes making you sick? And the answer is they absolutely, absolutely are. Now, another thing I uncovered while researching tonight's show is that many of these same sickening chemicals that are put in our clothing are also put in our food. So it just went from bad to worse. So first I'm going to talk about the clothes and what's in the clothes. Then I'm going to talk about chemicals that are also in the food. Then I'm going to actually talk about diseases that doctors say we have that might actually be attributable to our clothing. And there's a lot of this going around. The Ebola scare, for example, is there are obvious environmental / political events causing sickness. And in order to get people to focus on something other than the true cause, a disease is created and christened. And in the minds of the people, the disease is the enemy, not the political and environmental factors creating the disease. So no, we're not going to talk about Ebola tonight, but we are going to talk about the poisons in our clothes. So basically, bottom line is, you do try to eat right, a lot of people do, but the chemicals in your food can harm you, and the same is true with your clothing. Your skin is, like your mouth, an organ of ingestion. It's a port of entry for poisons, for chemicals, really anything that touches your skin. But unlike your mouth, poisons that enter through your skin are not filtered by your liver or your tonsils, and they can be especially dangerous. So I'm going to talk about a few chemicals tonight, we only have an hour, that are embedded in our clothes and how they make us ill and what to do about it, well, naturally, of course. So how do these chemicals get into our bodies anyway from these textiles? So with skin, we mentioned. However, another huge route is through inhalation of the chemicals. So in other words, if the chemicals are the type that evaporate, they're in your clothes, just like the chemicals in the bedding that I purchased, and they are released into the air and you inhale them. And so the chemicals in our clothes can evaporate anywhere from minutes, hours, weeks, or even years. And so the inhalation is huge. And this is even bigger because of the Western lifestyle of living in a hermetically sealed house. This is considered a smart move because, of course, it lowers your energy bills. Right. But what it also does is these chemicals that are released from your clothes get to circulate around the house again and again and again, and everyone gets to inhale them. And so this is not good. And finally, the way that they get into your body is every time you use a clothing or brush up against the clothing or clothing is scratched, fibers are created. You can call it dander if you want to. Or little microfibers break off, and these can be inhaled or swallowed. And crawling children get these, pets get them, and as I said, you get the whole recirculation thing going again and again and again. So obviously one natural solution to this is to live in a well-ventilated home. Now, I lived in Syracuse, New York. A well-ventilated home in the wintertime is not something you want. So what I would do is I would open one window in every room and turn the fan on and get the air exchange going for a few minutes. Then I would close the room, the windows, and let the house heat up. But just that one little thing made such a huge difference in the comfort and breathability of the house. So if you're in a cold area, it doesn't really make sense to leave your house open to the elements, then just open your windows for a few minutes during the day, and then air the place out, and then close them. Now, some places will advocate that you just crack the window like a quarter of an inch. I did try that, too, but I felt that that created a bit of a stiff, cold breeze. But I think a lot depends on where you live. In Syracuse, it can get to be 20, 40 below, so that was not at all practical. The other thing, too, of course, is the size of your house. If you're having a large, if you're in a large house, opening every single window, in one window in every single room, is a pretty big task. And then by the time you get all the windows open, of course, you can just repeat the circuit and close them all. But that's another issue. So there are concerns, as always. There's always an agency or organization that's monitoring the poisons. And, you know, this is really shocking when you think that it's not as if people don't know. When I say people don't know, I mean as if the industry doesn't know or as if the government doesn't know, because there's actually a whole university devoted to this. So there's a School of Engineering and Textile Safety. And I had to read that twice. So it's the Philadelphia University's Institute for Textile and Apparel Product Safety. So there's a whole university devoted to this topic of textile and apparel safety. Now, when you have a whole university devoted to something, you know that there's a lot of that something going on. So there's a lot of concern about the safety of textiles and clothes used by United States consumers. And reports of health threats, you know, are constantly coming to light. And Dr. Brookstein, David Brookstein of the Philadelphia University Institute for Textile and Apparel, says that we are quite concerned about potentially toxic materials that U.S. consumers are exposed to every day in textiles and clothes available in this country. So this to me is, it looks like we have a parallel situation going on with medical care being so dangerous, yet being so highly monitored, and we have a clothing industry impregnating our clothes with poisons, again, being highly monitored, yet these things continue. So let's just start at the top here. Polyurethane is a byproduct of the process used to make petroleum from crude oil. And it's got two main ingredients, polyols and diisocyanates. Yes, cyanide. And so a polyol is a substance created through a chemical reaction using methyl loxarane and toluene is the most common isocyanate employed in polyurethane manufacturing. It's considered the workhorse of flexible foam production. Now, toluene is seriously, all capital letters, very bad news. Toluene puts holes in your brain and creates what doctors expertly call sponge brain. So you just literally have a sponge or Swiss cheese brain because there's these holes in there and things are missing. So both methyloxarane and toluene have been identified as carcinogens by the state of California. And they're in the list of toxic substances under the Canadian EPA Act as well. And then, of course, there's propylene oxide, and it has been proven to cause mammary tumors. So these are things that you can expect to find in polyurethane. But none of these chemicals has ever been regulated for their potential to induce breast cancer, even though toluene and propylene oxide have been found to cause breast cancer. Now, the U.S. EPA considers polyurethane foam fabrication facilities a major sources of several hazardous air pollutants, including methyl chloride and hydrogen cyanide. So I think we can all agree that hydrogen cyanide is, like, seriously not good. And, of course, there's been a lot of occupational exposures resulting in isocyanate-induced asthma, respiratory disease, and death. And so in North Carolina, they actually forced the closure of a polyurethane manufacturing plant after local residents tested positive for toluene exposure and isocyanate exposure. And these residues were found in public schools as well. So what's the big deal? So how is toluene used in things that are likely to come in contact with your skin? So let's take a look and see what they do with toluene. And then we're going to get back to its poisons and toxicities. So toluene is used for dyes and pigments and pigment antioxidants in rubber processing and manufacture of explosives. Okay, so kids' rubber boots and rain jackets might be an issue here. But this is what really got me. If toluene is used to synthesize benzoic acid, benzyl alcohol, benzaldehyde, sodium benzoate. I mean, sodium benzoate is ubiquitous. That's Latin for everywhere. Any beverage in a bottle that's preserved has sodium benzoate in it. It's an ingredient in your soda pops. But it doesn't stop there. Syrups, sauces, fruit juices, and also in your perfumes. And, of course, in the manufacture of, get this, oral antibiotics. Yes. And it's a major component in the manufacture of saccharin. That's right, a sweetener. But what got toluene on today's list is that it's used in the manufacture of fake leather. Yes, a lot of you animal activists out there are using fake leather. You can call it pleather. Synthetic leather is what they're calling it, for waterproofing and coating fabrics for waterproofing. So if there's anything you own that's waterproof, the coating likely is toluene based. This is totally, absolutely, completely outrageous, and I think really shocking. Now, so the textile use is what got toluene on the radar for today's program. I think toluene is so awesome that it deserves a little more investigation here. So chemical feedstocks employ toluene, which means it might be in the meat that you're eating. So in other words, it's in the food that's fed to farm animals. It's in pharmaceuticals and perfumes. No wonder antibiotics are so dangerous. No wonder they contribute to the death of more or less 100,000 Americans every year. So this is another piece to that elusive puzzle. So we know how it's used. So, what's the big deal? If my kids would say, well, so what, Mom? Well, there's a lot going on with toluene. Now, toluene, many of you might know, is a major ingredient in glue sniffing. And so let's see what the MSDS, this is the Material Safety Data Sheet information, on toluene says. Now, the thing about toluene, or I say about material safety data sheets, is this is the information that must legally be given to anyone who works around this stuff. It is not information that the industry is under obligation to share with a consumer purchasing an item that has this agent in it. So what we're talking about now is anything that's waterproof. We're talking about the raincoats for yourself or your kids. We're talking about the rubber boots. At least these things we know have toluene in it. Now we know that toluene is a major ingredient in your soda pops and in creating sodium benzoate, a major preservative. So let's hear about toluene. It's clear. It evaporates easily. It's flammable. It means it catches fire. And it causes irritation in the eyes, skin, mucous membranes. It causes headache, drowsiness, or other effects of the central nervous system. That's a pretty vague and large category. Harmful, may cause lung damage if swallowed. Severe exposure may cause respiratory depression, unconsciousness, seizures, and death. Do not allow product to contact skin, eyes, or clothing. And do not freeze the vapors. Well, this is just impossible to adhere to if the toluene is in your clothing. Now, I first encountered toluene, of course, in medical school. We talked about it. But I bumped into it again as I was researching turpentine, because toluene is on the same shelf of solvents as turpentine in the hardware store. And so I looked on the toluene can, and, man, they had some warnings that were just more outrageous even than the turpentine warnings. So more on toluene. We have delayed effects. These are effects that don't occur immediately. So repeated and prolonged exposure to solvents may cause brain and nervous system damage. Repeated or prolonged exposure may cause damage to the liver and kidneys. Now, we have here some unpaired organs, okay? So we're talking about damage to the brain. You only got one of those. Damage to the liver, you only got one of those. And, of course, to the kidneys. And possible risk, they're not sure, to the unborn child. So this is a lot of damage. And this is the kind of damage you get with prolonged exposure. And toluene accumulates over time. So this is not the kind of thing where you're exposed to it once and, you know, it dissipates. So each exposure kind of builds on the prior exposure. And just in case, you know, you're not sufficiently concerned, toluene aggravates medical conditions such as respiratory disease, liver or kidney dysfunction, blood problems, cardiovascular, that would be heart disease. Central nervous system disorders may be aggravated by exposure. So what's a CNS disorder? Seizure, stroke, those types of things. So this is really a bad actor. And so I said to myself, man, this is a lot of badness here. So if this is really the case, then what do the doctors say about this? What do the doctors say about this toluene that's filling our clothing? All right, so you have to, when you're dealing with doctors, you have to look through the same narrow lens that they look through. And what is that narrow lens? The toluene lens that doctors look through is glue sniffing. So what do doctors say about glue sniffing? So what they're saying about glue sniffing is it causes sudden, acute, that means sudden and quick intoxication, rapid onset of central nervous system symptoms like euphoria, hallucinations, delusions, tinnitus, dizziness, confusion, headache, vertigo, seizures, ataxia, means you can't walk straight, stupor, means you can't quite wake up, and, of course, coma when you absolutely can't wake up. Now, this is interesting because I just can't tell you how many people complain about tinnitus. And over the years, tinnitus has been the most difficult symptom to get rid of. And I've noticed that it's my middle class and wealthier patients that just can't seem to shake this tinnitus. In other words, people most likely to buy, well, new clothes. And dizziness and confusion. Now, confusion, it goes, a lot of things can go into confusion. For example, maybe the person has the appearance of having mild Alzheimer's, when really it's the sodium benzoate in all of their beverages, it's the toluene in their clothing, and a lot of different things. And also, if you look at older people, a lot of older people, you know, in my family, they put this waterproof plastic covering over their furniture to protect it from the grandkids. That would be me when I was younger. And so, of course, you get things like confusion and Alzheimer's. Headache, another one. I mean, I can't tell you. People have headaches, and they just can't shake it. They just can't get rid of these headaches. And, again, you know, check for that sodium benzoate. And check to see if you're using environmentally conscious fake leather. Maybe you have fake leather shoes. Maybe you have fake leather jacket. These things have toluene in them as needed or used for their finishes. Vertigo, which is dizziness. Seizures are not as frequent, and there are many things that go into seizures. Again, ataxia, and this can happen as the toluene level increases. But it doesn't stop there. You can get neuropsychosis. What's that mean? That means that you get erratic behavior that leads a psychiatrist to slap a label on you. So you can get cerebral and cerebellar degeneration with ataxia. And again, this is something that happens mysteriously. The doctors don't have any solutions for this. And generally, they just monitor it and do a bunch of tests and do more tests and more tests. But it could be your clothes. It could be your waterproof attire. And, of course, it could be your polyurethane mattress. So seizures, of course, choreoathetosis. That means you just move your arms around in a kind of rhythmic way, pointlessly. Optic and peripheral neuropathies. And there's a lot of eye nerve problems going around these days. And again, mysterious. Ask your doctor, he'll tell you. No cause, no cure. But here we have a common element, toluene, sodium benzoate, that apparently could be responsible for this. And peripheral neuropathies, these are things like numbness in your hands and toes, and then decreased cognitive ability. You know, we can use the dirty word, it's Alzheimer's. And so when you take a look at this stuff in the clothes, when you take a look at the use of toluene, especially in the waterproof applications, you've got an elderly person, you're putting a waterproof coating on their bed possibly, maybe even going so far as to put plastic diapers on them, and there's a lot of plastic that seems to get into the lives of elderly people. Again, what do we see here? Decreased cognitive ability, yes. Blindness, difficulty hearing, loss of hearing, and, of course, deafness. This is shocking. you know, that one little thing embedded in your clothes and your foam pillows and mattresses can do all this. But, yes, it can. And cardiopulmonary. Toluene has a direct negative effect on cardiac automaticity. What does that mean? Well, your heart beats automatically. And so in order for doctors to charge you a lot of money, they use the word automaticity. And so in other words, if the toluene stops your heart from beating automatically, then it causes, here they say, sudden death. Yeah, sudden death. And so pulmonary effects include asthma, asphyxia, which is choking. I think the asphyxia in defense of toluene is from people spraying the toluene into a plastic bag and putting the plastic bag over their head. But acute lung injury and, of course, aspiration pneumonitis. That means when people are sucking in the toluene or inhaling toluene fumes, it creates a chemical pneumonitis. The chemical damage to the lungs, lining of the lungs, and the person develops pneumonia. Now, you would think that that would be enough, but there's more. There is more. The reason I'm going through this is because not only is toluene ubiquitous in terms of its presence in waterproof materials and its presence in our foam mattresses, but also it's in the food supply. It's in your beverages. It's in your sauces. It's in the pharmaceuticals. And so these are the problems or issues that it causes. Stomach symptoms from inhalation and ingestion may result in abdominal pain, nausea, vomiting, throwing up blood, poisoning the liver with swelling of fluid in the belly, yellowness, enlarged liver, and liver failure. And this is really interesting. It would explain why people who maybe don't have a drinking problem might develop severe liver issues. And a rare form of hepatitis is called hepatic reticuloendothelial failure. It is reported with toluene exposure. And so they're laying all this to the abuse of volatile substances in young adults. And I'd like to say I'm not so sure. It might be that you put someone on a nice, comfy memory foam mattress and give them a nice brand new raincoat with some nice brand new galoshes, and you may get toluene toxicity. And then, of course, there's the kidneys. You can get renal tubular acidosis, which is not bad. It's usually reversible. Hypokalemia, that means low potassium, that's very bad because that can cause your heart to whack out or beat too fast and then just kind of give out. Hypophosphatemia, this is shocking because normal American diet is very high in phosphates, but the toluene can actually lower the amount of phosphates in the blood. It can elevate the chloride, elevate the blood urea nitrogen, in other words, give an appearance of kidney failure, and it can create pus in the urine with no bacteria, bleeding in the urine, and protein in the urine. So these are a lot of effects from this one little substance, which, as I say, is ubiquitous. It's everywhere. And then, of course, there's blood exposure, blood consequences of the exposure. Basically, you can get something called aplastic anemia, which is universally deadly. Once you get aplastic anemia, that means that your body stops making blood cells. You need frequent transfusions, and eventually the transfusions are not even able to keep up. And it can cause increased white cells, enlarged red blood cells, eosinophils. Those are blood cells that show up when there's some kind of irritation going on or an allergy reaction. And so basophilic stippling and hypochromia, these are all laboratory tests that the doctor may see. And a lot of times the doctor will see these test results on a CBC, which is complete blood count. And the standard of care when these things are seen is to order a bone marrow biopsy. Yes, extreme torture, extreme torture. And so when your doctor says, time for a bone marrow biopsy, you can say, well, doctor, could this be toluene poisoning? So the bone marrow biopsies usually don't show anything treatable, but that's the standard of care, is to do a bone marrow biopsy when you get things like basophilic stippling, hypochromia, eosinophilia, lymphocytosis, and macrocytosis. And skin, you can get anything and everything. So skin contact with toluene can range in severity from dermatitis, which is redness and itching, to extensive chemical burns with coagulation, necrosis, which means it can actually literally clot the blood right there in the vessels on your skin. Of course, it even affects your muscles. doesn't affect your skeletal muscles directly, resulting in rhabdomyolysis. This is a fancy word. But rhabdomyolysis means it dissolves the red blood cells. They just break open and spill their contents all over the place. Naturally, the kidney, helpful organ that it is, cleans up the mess and then develops kidney failure. So this rhabdomyolysis is nothing to sneeze at. Also what happens with it is you get aches and pains all over the place, read fibromyalgia. And you get profound, like I said before, low potassium, and severe muscle weakness looks a lot like Guillain-Barré syndrome. That's very bad, which is basically total paralysis requiring ventilation for an extended period of time until the toluene exposure wears off. So it's really pretty bad news. Now, let's read this other piece here. It's in Greek, which is medical leave, so I'm going to translate for you. In animal studies, chronic inhalational exposure, that means breathing this over a period of time, toluene was found to affect bone metabolism, all right, contributing to bone resorption, that means dissolving bone, and stopping the formation of new bone. Sounds like osteoporosis to me, doesn't it? There we go. So we have here a substance, toluene, that's in our clothes, it's in our food, it's everywhere, and it's mimicking many of the diseases of the day. It's mimicking osteoporosis, Guillain-Barré, dermatitis, liver issues, kidney issues, central nervous system problems, mental illness. And so, really, all of these things that we've been trained to watch out for, look out for, get checked early, prevent, take drugs for, might actually simply be toluene side effects when you consider how ubiquitous the toluene is. And so I just want to say a little bit about the natural avoidance of this stuff. You know, you really cannot overestimate the importance of used clothing. Used clothing. You know, let the toluene dissipate. Now, let's say you can't use used clothing, for, as in a used mattress. You could just not get a mattress that has this in it. That's one solution. Another solution is to cover the mattress, with cotton fabric and batting. And what that will do, once you've let it ventilate out for 24 hours or more, you then cover it with batting. What I've done with mine is I covered it with a 2-inch thick batting material, and that has pretty much stopped the outgassing. Now, many people say, well, Dr. Daniels, is there a device I can buy and figure this out? And what about some kind of detection device? Believe it or not, your nose is the most sensitive detection device there is. It's a very good detection device. What if you're older and your nose is just not that great, can't smell that well? Then once you've before you complete your abatement procedures, you can ask someone who's 20 years old or younger to take a whiff, and they'll say, oh, my God, toluene is awful. Then you do your abatement, let the fabric or cushion hang outside for at least 24 hours, then bring it in, put it on the bed, then put the other cover at least 2 inches thick over it, and then have your humble and faithful assistant give it another sniff. So if the assistant sniffs and can't smell anything, then you're good to go. But this is shocking, just how profound the stuff in our fabrics can be, just how incredible an effect it can have. And, you know, I just can't say enough about buying used clothing. Or what we do here in Panama is people will buy fabric, they'll launder the fabric numerous times, and then either they'll sew the clothes themselves or have a seamstress sew the clothes. So that's another solution, high-end solution, of course, but you're worth it. So let's see what else is in our clothes. Now, one thing that really amazed me as far as being in the clothes is formaldehyde. I found this really shocking. Like, formaldehyde? Are you kidding? What could possibly be the justification for putting formaldehyde in clothing? Well, I can't tell you how surprised I was when I found numerous articles on the Internet justifying the use of formaldehyde in clothing and how important it was and how we just should not worry at all. Just don't worry your pretty little head about it. It's only formaldehyde. And so what was the rationalization? The rationalization was that many of the clothes that are worn in the United States are actually manufactured in a tropical environment and then shipped long distances on boats. In other words, shipped from China. And in order so that they do not mold or disintegrate during the long trip, they are doused with formaldehyde. And this, of course, is very important and, of course, understandable. And this was written actually by, it wasn't written by Chinese. It was written by, an American source. It was like, well, of course, this only makes sense. And this doesn't make any sense at all to me. So now there is information on formaldehyde. So let's talk about the toxicity first, and then we can talk about abatement. Because in our culture, you've got to wear something. I live here in Panama in the hot, hot tropics, but I can tell you there are some days where I wonder why anyone would want to wear clothes at all. And I can all of a sudden understand why people just walk around with no clothes, because it's really hot down here. But many of you live in places in the world where, first of all, it's a dress code, and second of all, it's a little colder than it is down here. So let's take a look at the material safety data sheet for formaldehyde. What goes on with formaldehyde? Well, potential hazards include very hazardous in case of eye contact. It's an irritant. Very bad for ingestion, hazardous in case of skin contact. It irritates the skin, it sensitizes the skin, and makes it sensitive so that it can be irritated by other items. And it's a permeator, which means it goes zoop right through the skin. And it's corrosive on eye contact. It's hazardous in case of skin contact. It's corrosive, so it'll dissolve your skin. And severe overexposure can result in death. And so we are not told what overexposure is or what severe overexposure is. And inflammation of the eye is characterized by, get this, redness, watering, and itching. Sounds like seasonal allergies to me, doesn't it? And chronic health effects is it can cause cancer. Hazardous in case of skin contact, and it causes cancer. And it's suspected carcinogen for human, and it causes cancer in mammalian somatic cells. What is that? That's breast cancer. I'll put that in English for you. And it causes mutations in bacteria and yeast, just what we need. And so the mutations in bacteria and yeast, it's not clear if that means that these mutations in bacteria and yeast make them resistant to modern therapy, or if these mutations in bacteria and yeast make them die. Not clear. And it can also cause teratogenic effects. What does that mean? It means birth defects, deformed children. Classified possible for humans, and also developmental toxicity. So this is really shocking, and the reason it's shocking, of course, is because we have so many people now who are giving birth to babies with autism. I mean, autism has just gone through the roof. Now, of course, many people would say, wait a minute, Dr. Dennis, isn't autism caused by vaccines? Well, it turns out that autism is actually multifactorial. And it turns out that the higher the income level of the mother, the more likely the baby is to have autism. Right. And so maybe the lady went out and bought a bunch of new clothes for her pregnancy. Possible. And maybe the toxins from these clothing reached the baby, because, you know, that stretched out skin over the womb is pretty thin and things penetrate pretty easily. So this is, again, another just incredible exposure. So formaldehyde, definitely bad news. Unfortunately, the formaldehyde is in all of our clothes, our T-shirts, our jeans, all the clothes that are manufactured and transported across the ocean. So you need to check and see where your clothes was made, clothing was made. Another reason to buy clothes in the United States. Am I going to say they're going to be chemical-free? No. But likely they'll be formaldehyde-free, because the reason for the formaldehyde is for the transportation. So like food, your clothing should be local. So this is really just amazing. Of course, it doesn't stop there. Why it would not be complete without taking a look at the flame retardant clothes for your little ones. This is another shocker. Now, again, when I was practicing medicine, I was just so busy that I just could not shop. I just didn't have time for it. Too busy practicing medicine, saving the neighborhood, educating people about health risks, you know, being on TV shows, volunteering for committees, and, you know, organizations that fed the poor and did all kinds of neat things. So I didn't have time to shop. And so I figured that I would just, actually my relatives figured, that they would just donate to me the used clothing from their kids, which was an awfully kind thing for them to do. And so, again, as I said, we just used clothing. So my kids, of course, would say, "Mom, you're a doctor. How come we're using used clothing?" I said, "Cause look at it. It's really stylish. Well, your cousin so-and-so's got great taste." But so they got through it, and it turns out that that's probably why they're vaccines didn't give them autism. But so let's take a look and see what the authorities say about the flame retardant. One way to know that your material has flame retardant is, it says, this article meets the flammability requirements of California Bureau of Home Furnishings Technical Bulletin 117. Yes, this is an indication that you've got flame retardant in your clothes. And this flame retardant is put in children's products, you know, car seats, strollers, baby changing mats, and children's sleepers is mandatory in. And these common flame retardants have been linked to learning disorders, read ADHD and autism, reduced fertility, and cancer. And they say, and this is really amazing, that something that causes all this is by law required in the clothing that we put on children. And so the problem, of course, is convincing legislators that protecting children from fire doesn't require exposing them to toxic chemicals is a difficult sell. And so a key obstacle to policy change is, of course, the chemical industry. And they invest these millions of dollars to promote flame retardants. And so Washington State actually had a Toxic Free Kids Act, which was returned to committee by the House of Representatives, and it would have been the first legislation in the country to ban fire retardant chemical known as chlorinated tris from children's products. And chemicals actually barred from children's pajamas in the 70s due to toxicity concerns, and California EPA declared it a carcinogen. So, but still, in a recent study, 80% of baby and children's products tested in a recent study showed chlorinated tris. And when Congress banned polychlorinated biphenyls, which is PCBs, in the 70s, the industry began employing an alternate flame retardant called PBDE, and that was discovered to be just as harmful. The industry then looked again for more chemical cousins, including chlorinated tris. And so what we have then is an industry that's trading one poison for another, and this is something that's being put on everything kids touch or physically come in contact with. And I think the solution to this, again, is to recycle these things that children use, to attempt to purchase things that don't have these ingredients, that don't have flame retardants on them, and to buy fewer things for our children. Yes, buy fewer things for our children. You might not need a changing mat. It might be that a simple towel will do the trick. So it might be that you don't need a stroller for the kid, that you can just hold your child in your arms. And so I look at all these things we buy for kids, playpens, cribs even. There was a time when we didn't buy cribs for children. You got a drawer out of the bureau drawer, and put it on the bed. Put it on the floor next to the bed, and put the kid in it. And it was easy to breastfeed. And when the kid outgrew the dresser drawer, well, by then he was hopefully walking, and you didn't need a crib anyway. So I think we need to question the whole consumerism mentality, especially when it comes to children. I know when I had my first child, I said, oh, my God, I want to be a good mother, and shouldn't I buy her a brass crib? It was $1,000 back then. Or, God, should I cheap out and buy a wooden Jenny Lind crib, which is the cheapest crib on the market? And so I agonized over that decision as to whether I should spend a couple thousand dollars on a chrome brass crib for my kid or whether I should buy the cheap, low-end wooden crib. My frugality got the best of me, and she got a wooden crib. And so all of these things, I can remember when I had my first child, about the only thing you could really buy for a kid was a playpen. These jelly jump-ups, these walker things, all these things just hadn't been invented, or I should say widely marketed. And so I think the best defense for the children is to buy as few things as possible and to minimize your contact with plastics. And what I did with my child, and again, I didn't realize at the time it was the right thing to do. I was just very frugal and whatever. So what I did was I sewed my son a pair of pajamas, and I made them four sizes too large so he could grow into them. And he eventually grew into them and outgrew them. But the pajamas lasted him several years. And since I sewed them myself, I bought fabric from the fabric store, washed it a few times at home, and then sewed the pajamas for him. And they were a rather unattractive orange and white type fabric. Not the prettiest, but he was too young to know the difference. And so what I'm trying to say is that we need to rethink how we celebrate the addition of a new member to the family. And we need to celebrate it maybe in ceremonial ways or symbolic ways, not in material ways. Because what this industry has given us for our children has amounted to condemning them to a life of sickness and decrease mental aptitude. And so I know if you're a new parent, it's really tough to resist the pressure from relatives either to buy you what they think you need to have or condemn you for not buying it yourself. I mean, I can tell you, with my third child, I got a lot of heat for not going out and buying her a new wardrobe. I said, well, I got these clothes from the first two kids. We can just hand them down. Oh, my poor mother. the grandmother, of course, of my daughter, was very, very not happy with that. And looking back, you know, it is tough to sort out all the baby pictures. Like, who's wearing that jacket? Is that Benjamin, William, or Emily? So, yes, there's a little bit of confusion with the pictures, but I think the positive impact on the health of children is really phenomenal. So use those hand-me-downs. If you don't have hand-me-downs, go to the used clothing store, and even then, wash it before you use it. But I think the used clothing store, number one. Number two, buying fabric, washing it first, actually washing it several times, and then either sewing the clothing yourself for the kids or have someone else sew it. But that's the realistic solution. And we have a question. Let's see if we can answer this question. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. Hi there, Dr. Daniel. Actually, my question is, it's about clothing, but it's off subject from what you've been talking about. I had a chiropractor tell me recently that one of the major causes for women's breast cancer is the underwire in a non-natural fabriced bra.
Absolutely.
And
absolutely.
Absolutely. So is it the underwire? Or I would imagine
no.
Most of my old bras, which I no longer wear, are polyester, I'm guessing. But it's really hard
material
to find. Excuse me?
The material, which is polyester, just simply adds insult to injury. What's going on is your body needs to detox, and it does detox from the skin. But when you take a synthetic fabric, let's say polyester or polyester Dacron, and you put it plastered onto your body tight enough to give your breast support, it chokes off the detoxing process, and then it causes toxins to accumulate in your breast. You're saying it's hard to find an appropriate bra? Yeah, that's not the answer. The answer is no bra. I've been really blessed to have very, 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 very small breasts, and so I went without bras since the age of 18. In other words, as soon as I left home. I just stopped wearing bras, and I started wearing, larger tops that were loose-fitting so it wouldn't seem so obvious that I wasn't wearing a bra. But the answer is to not wear a bra. And for many people, they would rather die than not wear a bra, and unfortunately, they do. So, the clothing is so, so, so important to your health. And I just have to say, if it doesn't feel right, it's not right. And that's really why I stopped wearing a bra, because it just didn't feel right. And they're now saying you can wear like a stretchy cotton bra, but if you're a woman and you've got breasts of any size, let's say B cup or bigger, the stretchy cotton stuff really doesn't get it. You're not going to be able to fit into your clothes, or I won't say your clothes, but the clothes that are the way they're styled today for women are just styled to man a bra. So you have to not fall into that trap. You have to make up your mind that you're just not dropping dead over someone else's dress code, which is, I think you just have to make up your mind what your priorities are. It's a tough decision, but only you can make it. Okay, well, that is the end of today's show, and we will see you back again next week. And we'll be sending out a notice for next week's topic. Thank you very much for everyone who tuned in.